employment connection.
Kieran Donaghy is an award-winning writer, international conference speaker, and teacher trainer. One of his particular areas of interest and expertise is on the use of images and the visual in English language teaching. Welcome to the podcast, Kieran.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much.
And Kerry Jones is a highly experienced freelance teacher, trainer, and materials writer. She is also one of the co-founders of ELT Footprint, a group dedicated to sharing initiatives and projects about how the ELT community can be more environmentally responsible. Welcome to the podcast, Kerry.
Thank you, Chris. Lovely to be here.
Welcome. Kerry, perhaps we could begin with you and asking you to outline how and why ELT Footprint came into being, what it does, and what you and your colleagues hope to achieve through it.
So ELT Footprint came to be in 2019, which was really kind of the year of the zeitgeist of the climate emergency, I think. The community was set up in May, but that was the year as well when obviously the whole youth movement was growing, you know, sort of exploding across the world. And a lot of governments were responding as well. And then there was a conference in Barcelona in May 2019, the Innovate Conference. And Daniel Barber spoke there and gave a plenary where he made a climate emergency declaration for ELT. And this kind of seemed to galvanize a lot of conversations that had been going on anyway, but they were kind of disparate, and that's what we felt anyway, that they were kind of dispersed across social media and as well as actually there face-to-face in the conference. And so there was a suggestion, how can we bring all of these people and these conversations together? And at the time, the thing that seemed to be the most natural was to use Facebook as a space where people were already sharing. And so this group was created, and I think on the first day there were already 300 members, and then it shot up to 1,000, 2,000. Now we're at 3,500 members on Facebook. But now the ELT Footprint community exists on Twitter, on LinkedIn, and as well as, but Facebook is still kind of the center of it. And the whole idea was this thing of creating a space for conversation, for sharing, for support, obviously all like-minded people involved in education in all kinds of different ways, and little projects that were kind of already set up were getting more backing, people were getting motivation to carry on with what they were already doing. So it wasn't as if we invented anything. It was that the community came together to support each other, I guess. And then from there, some projects have grown through the community, because of the community maybe even, but kind of at the base of it, right at the heart of it, is teachers, educators interested in the topic, wanting to find out more ways to be able to actually do something, to take action, to feel like we're making a difference. And I think that's covered both of your questions.
It certainly has. I was just going to ask you a little bit, say it's a community for like-minded people. What do you think can be done to convince people who aren't like-minded about this, about the importance of the work of ELT Footprint and why? Because there's, although the ELT ELT community does appeal to lots of progressive people often, there is also a lot of people who would push back against that and say the job of an English teacher is to teach English. What are you doing getting involved in things like this? How do you push back against that? What kind of ways do you have to convince unlike-minded people to become more like-minded?
Okay, so first of all, we're not into proselytizing. We're into encouraging and supporting and motivating people who are already interested, as it were. We're not out there to convert people to our cause or anything, because I think that generally has a kind of drum-banging negativity to it. But there is that idea of, for many, many global issues, that teachers will say, that's not my role. That's not my place. I teach the language. I don't teach the issues. And a very valid standpoint could also be that, you know, my students aren't interested in this, and why should I? And my comeback on that usually is, well, if we want to take a really pragmatic line with this, this topic is the topic of the moment, and it's growing, and it's only going to become more the topic of the moment. And you look, again, really pragmatically at exams. And it's a topic that's coming up in exams more and more. I just did, a year ago, a kind of a very, very quick survey through the main, Cambridge Suite exams, and found on almost every paper a question which did have an environmental slant to it. So that sustainability, the environment, global issues, these are things that students who want to pass exams need to be able to talk about, to have the vocabulary, to be able to process a text. So even if you don't buy into the importance of it as an issue, your students need it. It's like it's language that they need to have. So for me, that's kind of like the bottom line salesman pitch that I give to try and
stop from there and sort of work up. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I had a chat with a young Brazilian teacher sometime last year who, and he was really, really keen to bring especially the climate emergency into the classroom, but he was working in a particular class with older Brazilians, and there were a lot of climate deniers in his group, and they didn't want to broach the subject at all, but he found that they had a common ground when it came to conservation and to damage to the environment locally. And at the time there had just been a huge oil spill on the coast near Salvador de Bahia, and so there was a heightened awareness of damage being done to the environment. So he was able to kind of coax them through this topic to talk about the environment in a way that they didn't find was off-putting or in some way threatening their stance. So I think, again, that's something that we, as a community, I think it's one of those values that we share, is that we look for common ground. We don't want to alienate anyone, or make anyone feel guilty, that's totally negative in anything, but in education in particular. So that we have to look for positive, for common ground, as much as possible.
Lovely. Thank you, Kerry. And Kieran, if I could come to you. When we think about the global climate crisis, we see the importance of the image and the visual within that. And certainly within lots of ELT textbooks and ELT English language teaching more widely, the image and the visual are very prevalent. Why do you think it's so important, and how do you see it being used within the field of ELT?
Yeah, I would say the main reason for using the image in language education is that we're living in an increasingly visual world, that we're living in the age of the image, and that the majority of the texts that our students are encountering outside the classroom are visual texts like photographs or multimodal texts which use visuals, such as a website is an example of a multimodal text, videos, short films, memes, infographics. These are the types of texts our students are encountering. So we need to bring these into the language classroom, specifically the language teaching classroom, and use these texts in the classroom to exploit these texts, but also to help students to analyze and interpret these texts. And a very interesting recent development has been the addition of the fifth skill of viewing in the English language curricula in a number of countries, including Canada, Singapore, and Australia. And this skill of viewing is essentially it's an active process of analyzing and interpreting visual texts such as TV programs, films, videos, paintings, infographics, symbols. And I think undoubtedly that this fifth skill of viewing will be added to English language curricula throughout the world in the near future. And so I think it's very important that we incorporate more visuals and multimodal texts into the classroom and into our teaching, and help students to analyze and interpret these texts. And this will help our students to be able to communicate more effectively in a world where communication is increasingly visual and multimodal in nature. And a very, very simple way of doing this is by, and one which is relevant to all contexts, including contexts where there aren't so many resources, is to use tried and tested viewing frameworks, which have been used in general education for many years and very successfully, and have only quite recently been incorporated into English language teaching classroom, and also are being incorporated into materials as well. And an example of one of these frameworks would be See, Think, Wonder, which is a visible thinking routine, which was developed at Harvard Graduate School by teacher researchers. And this is a very, very simple routine which can be used with any image. And essentially, there are three questions that the teacher asks the students. What do you see? So if we think of just one image, and probably an image which all of the listeners will know. So it's the image of a polar bear clinging onto an iceberg. And so we could say to the students, what do you see? And the students would say what they see. And they would say, I see a polar bear on an iceberg. And then the next question is, what do you think? And you say, well, I think this may be the result of climate change because, and the students give their answer. And they say, what do you wonder? I say, I wonder what's going to happen to the polar bear. Did the polar bear survive? Did the polar bear manage to get where it was going? Did the polar bear get any food? I wonder why we don't do more to try to counteract climate change. So this would just be one example of a very simple routine that we could use. And as I said, this can be applied in any context. And the second thing I would say is that in general, the reason for using images in language education in general is that we're living in an increasingly multimodal world, and that the construct of communicative competence changes where the majority of texts are multimodal texts, specifically referring to the climate crisis. I would say that a key component of climate crisis education is what has been termed environmental literacy, and so that there's this need to teach concepts such as global warming, sustainable food, green jobs, carbon footprints, etc. And images are extremely useful in the language classroom to illustrate these concepts to our students and for our students to learn these concepts. And so therefore, I think images are particularly useful for teaching these concepts, and therefore developing our students' environmental literacy.
Thank you, Kieran. And what kind of skills do you think teachers would need support with in order to do this effectively? You know, for many teachers, they're used to teaching, they say, the four skills, and then suddenly, oh, I've got to teach the fifth skill of viewing. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? I don't know what a meme is, et cetera, et cetera. What sort of support do they need in that situation?
There is a need for in initial teacher training and in-service teacher training for teachers to receive specific training in visual literacy and multimodality. This is very rarely possible. So teachers, what I would recommend that most teachers will have at the moment will have to actually do this themselves. As far as I know, there's only one institution in the world which is actually teaching their new teachers. This is the School for International Training in the United States, one of the most prestigious TESOL teacher training institutions in the world. They're now actually teaching their new teachers six skills. There's an additional skill of visually representing as well, which perhaps today we won't go into because of time, but essentially this is visually representing would be when students create a PowerPoint. This is visually representing. documenting. The students are not just using printed texts, they're using images, they're using videos, they're using infographics, they're using graphs. So they're this sixth skill as well. But the simplest way that I know of is just looking at the viewing frameworks which have been developed, for example, as I mentioned at Project Zero, the visible thinking routines, also visual thinking strategies. There are wonderful resources on the website which show teachers how to use these routines. And these routines are very, very simple, and they're simple for a reason. So it's easy to for them to become part of classroom culture. There's normally three steps. They're very, very simple. Three steps or three questions. And they're very, very easy to remember and to apply. The only thing that the teacher has to do is to realize it takes time for the teacher to become proficient in the use of these routines, and it takes time for students to become proficient. So it's best to take one routine at a time. For example, the one that I mentioned before, See, Think, Wonder, and use that many times and to become proficient at it, and for students to become used to this routine. Not to use what See, Think, Wonder and then to use another routine in the next class, to become proficient in these very, very simple routines. And then the teacher gets more confident in the use of this routine, and the students get confident in the use of of the routine. As I said, at the moment, there's very little training in this, but this will change, I believe, in the near future. Yeah, it's in the process.
Lovely. Thank you, Kieran.
Come in maybe with an additional layer to this. I love all of those visual thinking routines, by the way, Kieran. Mm-hmm. And it's the choice of images, I think, is mm-hmm. vital, as yeah. well as, and maybe this is something as well that teachers, but I think even more so published materials, need to take a lot more care over, and that I think we can learn a lot of lessons from journalism, for example. So The Guardian has published articles recently about how they approach images when talking about the climate emergency and the type of images that they find to be more effective. There is an organization called Climate Visuals, which I'm sure, Kieran, you're aware of, that has a free gallery of interesting images from around the world, which are not what might be the stereotypical. And I'm sorry here, but I'm going to say that the polar bear tends to fall into the stereotypical.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that some of the underpinning principles for choosing images which really are going to get students thinking and responding and wondering, as you said, Kieran, are ones which have some kind of a human story involved, preferably some kind of a local link, which means that the context is familiar to the students, or some kind of a surprise, something which makes them stop and rethink. So I'm thinking now maybe going back again pre COVID, that there were the horrible, terrible bushfires in Australia. And there were lots of different choices of images that could be used to represent that particular situation. And a lot of them were these big images of the bushfires, which were somehow overwhelming. It was this enormous disaster and represented in such a way that there's nothing you can do about it. So that the only reaction that they provoked was hopelessness, really. And it was such an overwhelming feeling of despair that it wasn't something that you'd want to take into a classroom at all. Mm-hmm. And I saw a story on the BBC which was just, for me, so touching and just the right way to go in, which was a little video of a clip telling homeowners in Australia how they could help the wildlife that were escaping from these fires. And they were tying fruit kebabs around the trees in their gardens and putting out big pots of water, but making sure there were stones in the pot so that if an animal a small animal accidentally fell into the water, they'd be able to climb back out again. And it's a tiny little 30-second clip, but it seemed to me to be this kind of glimmer of hope in this horrible story. And so that, for example, would be a really, in my mind, a really effective visual text to share mm-hmm. with the students, because then you yeah. could talk about this thing of, well, these are the consequences, what are people doing, and this idea that doing is possible, that acting is possible, that even in such a terrible situation, you can do something. So I think that this is kind of another underpinning principle, I think, of dealing with any of the major global issues which can be daunting for teachers, scary to talk about, is to find a story, a human element to that story, and so that it becomes much easier for students to be able to respond and react to it. And then I think those routines that you're talking about, Kieran, can become really, really powerful, but the message that we can take away is a more positive and human one, I suppose.
And I guess it's coming back to that word Kieran used, the idea of wonder from a language learning perspective. As soon as students are wondering about something and want to say something, they want the language. They ask their teacher, how do you say this?
Yeah.
And that's what yeah. could make them use the language.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think maybe... Yeah, go on, Kieran.
No, please, Kerry, go ahead.
I just wanted to add a tiny little other thing about the whole visual literacy is that it marries so well and so easily with developing critical thinking, for example. Mm-hmm. And that what we've found quite a few times coming up on the ELT Footprint group, for example, are images being shared that are fake. And mm-hmm. What a yeah. wonderful lesson that can give yeah. A teacher mm-hmm. is to take in the image and then get the students to say, you know, is this a real image or is it fake? And if it's fake, mm-hmm. why? And why did they do it? And then you have the it's a lovely gift of a lesson as well. So, for example, yeah. there was one of a beach strewn with rubbish, and tourists had been photoshopped onto it, sitting in deck chairs in the middle of this beach. And it wasn't necessarily obvious that it had been photoshopped at all, but you could go and search the original image, and you could see the original image without the tourists. And so just comparing the two opens up a beautiful discussion about why did they do this? Is it effective? Is it not effective? And why? You know, so again, the visual thinking routines, the questioning things always. And so then it marries with so many things. So the visual literacy, the eco-literacy, critical thinking, they all come together in what would be actually a simple framework for a teacher to work with.
Yeah.
Thank you. Kieran, did you want to...
I just absolutely agree with what Kerry said there. And the point about the polar bear image being stereotypical, it is absolutely stereotypical. But I chose that one because it's the one image I think that nearly everyone will have seen. So I did choose that. But again, as Kerry said, I think this in course books, the selection of images is very important. That there has been a recent tendency to use the same type of image, or in fact the same image in course books, and it can obviously lose its impact when it becomes stereotypical or cliched.
Does it become one of those images that we just see and gloss over? We don't really think about
yeah,
it because it's such a familiar part of our language.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's just because we've seen it so much, we don't really analyze it. It's very superficial the way that we deal with it. Perhaps if it's a new image, or it's, as Kerry said, an image which tells there's a narrative behind it, that human element, this is a key thing. And this would be why I would say is another reason for using images in language education in particular, but particularly in climate crisis education, is the fact if we can use an image which is a narrative, and I would say most images we should be using are narratives, there is a human element, there's something behind it, that this would also be a way of developing what has been termed ecological empathy, sort of empathy towards all living beings, plants and the planet. And yeah, I would agree with Kerry there completely about the choice of images is very, very important, and that perhaps publishers should try to move away from just the images on the image bank, such as Getty, and try to find some other images from other, for example, Unsplash, which is a copyright free website. They have wonderful images about related to climate change, which the publishers could use, just crediting, Unsplash and the photographer there.
Thank you. If I could just widen the discussion a little bit about what we mean by an image or the visual. So thinking perhaps of lower resource contexts where people may not be able to access these digital resources and so on. Yep. And so on. I mean, could we just describe the landscape where they live as the visual, and how could we use that within language learning situation with regards to the climate crisis? To either of you.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take that one.
Yeah.
So obviously the visual is also our surroundings. I mean, you know, sort of we have eyes. So if and as they say, the blind as well visualize. So it's just something which is incredibly human to use the visual. But I think that this idea of the local context and familiarity is what's coming in as key, and that that is always there and available. The outside world, if we can take classes and students out of a building and into their environment, obviously that's always going to be something which is going to add an extra dimension to education in general. With younger learners, there's nothing better than taking them out and getting them to wonder and question about the world around them, things that that they've taken for granted. And so, yes, of course, then that our surroundings, whatever they are always incredibly rich resources, and possibly the number one rich resource.
And nothing, I guess, could be as contextually relevant as what's outside your classroom.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think no matter how highly resourced teaching context is, it should be taking the lesson outside the room, away from the screen, into the real world around us. And so it's actually sometimes might even hamper that kind of empathy that Kieran was talking about as well, that connection with the world around us, if we are channeling too much attention onto artificial artifacts rather than having a look at, you know, what's around us.
Absolutely. And one final question to both of you. Perhaps begin with you, Kieran. It's just, how do you feel the ELT community as a whole is responding to the climate crisis? And are you optimistic about the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the ELT community is responding well. I think ELT Footprint is an excellent initiative, which has caused a lot of positive change in the way that teachers are approaching the climate crisis. So, and I can see that in coursebooks are incorporating units related to the climate crisis in many ways, and I think this is something which is positive. So in general terms, I am optimistic about this.
And do you see, Claire, as Kieran, you say about course books and so on, have you seen changes in your years of experience working in ELT about how the issue is treated?
I would say I have. Perhaps before it was presented in some ways as if it was a hypothesis, as if climate change was a hypothesis. Now it seems to be much more explicit that they're actually saying, no, it's, you know, climate change, and we are having these things like sustainable food, fast fashion is actually mentioned explicitly. There's no real debate about it. It's very clear. And this is something that I have noticed that rather than being a hypothesis, it's much more explicit about it, which I think is positive. Just perhaps one just sort of caveat would be that perhaps I think that we need to be, sometimes we need to be a bit judicious about the, we can overdo it. Recently when I wrote, a course book, and I was doing the, I was writing the video activities, I would normally select the videos myself, but the editorial team chose the videos. And I, with the best intentions in the world, I know, but 7 of 10 units were on climate change. And I think this is too much because, frankly, as a writer, I don't think I've got that much to say after seven units. And I think the students would be a little bit... It would lose its impact, I would say. So I think we have to be judicious. We certainly need to include things about sustainable food, green jobs, etc. But I think we need to be sometimes a bit judicious about this. That would be my only caveat.
I think I'd agree there with you, especially with the capital letters, you know. The two capital C's of climate change makes it feel like it's this thing that's apart almost. And whereas I like the analogy with technology and the way the treatment of technology has changed in coursebooks. So like you're saying, you know, it used to be in the unit on the future. And, you know, flying cars and whatever, that would be technology. And then it was kind of, oh, God, we can't talk about it in the future because it'll just, and anyway, it'll be out of date. As soon as the book is published, it'll be out of date. So then it started to be like in the past. We'll talk about technology in the past. And then students can fill in what's happening in the present. And then it just became pervasive. You don't have a unit on technology anymore. Every single topic that's discussed, We include media, we include technology. It's a given. And I think that if we can start moving towards sustainability actually being a given. So as you say, in the food unit, there is a discussion of food in general. And part of that is the question of the sustainability of food production. In the fashion unit, there's a discussion of clothes and fashion in general. And then as part of that, there's the idea of the sustainability of fashion and of fast fashion. And so that it actually is something which will become, it won't be a topic in its own right. It's just another aspect of life, which is there, whatever topic you're talking about. I don't think we're there yet. I think we're still there with the unit in the course book, which is called the environment. And all the students go, oh, we've done this to death. Why are we doing the environment unit again?
Finish the environment. We've done it.
Yeah. Because I think they have this feeling that they're being told things.
Yeah.
They don't want to be told things anymore. And so that's another thing, is to flip it so that, as Kieran was saying with the visual thinking techniques, that students aren't being told things, they're not being informed, they're exploring, they're questioning, they're bringing their own experiences and their own judgments into play, and that's what textbooks should try to do, in fact, not transmit information, but encourage the students to bring their own information into play as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Kieran, Kerry, thank you very much for your time. The Climate Connection.